Hey, what up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. We know you guys are going to have a good one on this one. We're talking about the fear of failure and how it keeps so many people from doing what they really, really wish they can do. I know so many people in my own life that has literally not chased their dream because they're afraid of failing. It's one thing that I learned real quick. You cannot be successful unless you're willing to fail. We know you guys are going to enjoy this. Here is Knights at the Round Table. And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. Tis your boy, Man Weezy. Got the queen to the left.
Hello.
Be Real to the right.
Yay.
And we are here. We're in here drinking some Ménage à Trois.
Yeah, this is a Ménage à Trois. We're drinking a red. It has been aged 3 months in bourbon barrels.
In bourbon.
It's a Cabernet Sauvignon.
Smells good.
2018. Okay. I'm going to taste this, but this is going to be my problem already before I taste it.
Ooh, it smells-
What?
So... all the wines that are always aged, because I love me some bourbon and some whiskey, right? If you come over, if you're ever in the area, let's go drink some whiskey together, okay? If you listen to this. So my problem with wine that's aged in bourbon barrels is I can never taste, it doesn't taste different than regular wine. Yeah. It always is like this, like, ooh, this one tastes so good.
This one has a smoky thing at the end.
Coffee that's aged in bourbon barrels is amazing.
Yeah, that's a masterpiece. Not this wine, but coffee aged in bourbon barrels. Yeah, like a little bit, but still.
Barely.
It just makes me wish I was drinking whiskey.
Man, today was a good day. We did another podcast. It had a good conversation.
Yeah.
Today the queen is going to give us a little bit of what you're reading, what you're reading.
Tell us.
This is the part where we talk about what we're reading outside of the podcast. And the queen, what book is this?
Okay, so this was a book that a friend of ours sent to us, Eddie Cisneros. I work with him on the road sometimes. He's done a lot of my videos, a lot of my YouTube stuff. He used to run all my social media a while back. And fun fact, he's also married to Jaki. My assistant and road manager. So
correct.
If you're listening, you probably know who Jaki is. So he's married to Jaki. Anyways, he sent us this book. It's John Cleese's Creativity, a short and cheerful guide. And it was a quick read, but this page right here hit me hard because I'm at a place in my life where I'm a creative person, but sometimes I don't always feel the creative juices flowing. And I feel like I have seasons where I'm like, ooh, I'm in it. I feel super creative. Like, that's a great idea. And I feel funny, or I feel whatever it is. And so I'm reading this book, like getting in touch with my creativity again and just like sparking things within me. This was powerful to me. It says, a whole morning or even a day when we produce nothing really good. But then we notice that despite this, we had a consistent average. Every week we wrote about 15 to 18 minutes of good stuff. All we had to do was sit there, whether it flowed or it didn't, and by Friday evening we would have enough. We came to understand that the blockages weren't an interruption in the process. They were a part of it. For example, when you eat, the bit where the fork returns empty to your plate isn't a failure. It's just a part of the eating process. What a powerful picture that is to think of, like, when you eat, the food goes in and your fork is empty. You're not failing. Like, the emptiness is a part of the process. Like, food on the fork, food not on the fork.
That's
like
deep.
Deep. Yeah, exactly. Like, creativity coming out, creativity not coming out. It's a part of the process. And it's helpful to me to, like, not get so hard on myself when it feels like it's a lot of, like, strikeouts and empty, empty, empty. Just knowing and trusting, like, I'm in the process. Because one of these things is going to be amazing. So just keep in the process.
Why are we so afraid of the process?
It's unknown.
Yeah, there's no certainty in that. Because you think, like, yeah, certainty is such a tricky thing, and it's such a dangerous thing, right? Like, because, yeah, like, when you give yourself to the process, you're literally giving yourself to the chance of just failing really bad.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, and again, it's kind of like we want to hit home runs.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to strike out, but, like, you can't really hit a home run unless you strike out. So it's always that weird thing, too, with that, but... I think the certainty in that process is what really scares us, because a lot of people, we live in a society and a culture that is, you are either a producer or you are a consumer. Mm-hmm. So based off you being a success is going to be a reflection of also your worth and your value.
Right.
You know? And so I think there's even an added thing of like, if I fail, I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. And I know you said you were reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm reading at the same time too. And in that book, it's a common theme that the worker bees or the people who never become rich, you know, a lot of them are afraid of failing.
Yeah.
Anybody who's become rich has had to take risk and not afraid to fail. And failure is almost a part of becoming rich or becoming successful. If you're not failing, then you're not trying anything worth trying.
Yeah.
Like it really is a process. And I remember I do real estate. So my one failure was the Nashville condo. And it wasn't even a failure. It was just something that didn't go my way. All the other houses went my way. Did what I wanted to do. Bought them when I wanted. Bought it at the price I wanted. Sold it at the price that I wanted. This one took me a year to sell. And it felt like a failure, you know? And it really woke me up to the idea of like, man, if you want to, this is nothing compared to what the people that you follow, that where you want to go as far as an investor, as far as a vocation, the amount of money that they're playing with, the amount of risk that they're taking, this is nothing. So if you can't be okay with something not going your way, then mm-hmm. don't try anything great.
We're taking some L's.
Get out of the kitchen and play it safe.
Yeah, because it's not going to happen for you. This is going to be... And sure enough, I've been trying to freaking buy a house to flip, buy a house to hold, and I'm putting offers on houses, not getting them. And I'm like, damn, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be, you know? And it's teaching me the process. And I was talking to a builder who told me, he's like, I've been doing this for 18 years. And he's like, I look at about 80 to 100 deals a day. And he's like, maybe I'll find one.
Sheesh.
Maybe. I'm like, he's like, 1,000 a week, no problem. I'll look through.
No.
Wow.
And I'll be happy if I find a good deal.
But that's what he does for a living.
That's all he does. And I'm doing it on the side. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, matter of fact, I got to call my realtor after this. Don't let me forget. I'm doing it on the side and I'm getting discouraged. And it's only been like 5 houses that I try to get. You know? And this guy's like 80 a day. I'm like, it really speaks to the testament of whatever you're trying to do in life, whatever it is that you're going after, that it takes time. And I don't think we're comfortable with time.
I'm definitely not comfortable with failure. I think I'm getting more comfortable for sure. But the fear of failure was definitely something that held me back from even creating to begin with. Because I was afraid to fail. And because fail meant all kinds of things. Like you were saying, that meant I'm a failure. That meant also, what are people going to think of me?
Yeah.
Like people are going to lose trust in my brand if I keep failing, you know, like, and I remember I wrote this quote one time that really, to me, it was powerful, but I was like, in order to stare failure in the face and say, you can't have me, you have to get close enough for it to hear you.
Mm.
Which means you have to get in the game.
Yeah.
And you have to keep trying. You have to get back up and keep trying. And that's scary when you're staring this scary monster named failure in the face.
Yeah.
Like it's a scary place to be, but it's very empowering when you do win, you know? But yeah, failure is the fear of it, like that boogeyman that's like not even a real thing, because there's always redemption. There's always another chance. There's always a get back up. Even like with this cancel culture, like, I mean, who knows? For everybody, it's different. The amount of time they take away after being canceled to come back. Like, I feel like there's redemption, and failure never wins. It's just that big boogeyman in the corner that's keeping you stuck.
Yeah. I was just talking with a client last night, and, you know, he hit me up and was like, Brandon, man, I am really struggling with my confidence, not playing well, you know, this whole thing. And so we were talking about this, and I was like, who is it that you feel like you're going to let down the most if you mess up? Which I think is a good question to ask people around us of like, if people who are in this place of like, you are afraid of messing up, who are you most afraid of letting down? For some people, it might be some mentor, it might be their pastor, it might be, you know, whatever, it might be themselves. And then you talk about actually like, what's the worst that could actually happen if you mess up? And so I'm asking him these questions and stuff. And I just said, I told him, I said, you know, the reason why I'm better than you at basketball, it's because I have messed up 10,000 more times than you. I have made thousands of more mistakes than you. And that is why I'm better. I was like, you'll never be good at this if you don't make as many mistakes as you can. Like anybody who's ever anything better than you at certain something, it's just because they have failed at that more times than you have. And that's really what it is. Like one of my favorite Michael Jordan commercials, this was like late 90s, and he's pulling up to the arena. Why am I forgetting where the Chicago Bulls played? Oh my God, this is terrible. I'm so embarrassed right now. The United Center, that's what it was. He's pulling up in his black Range, and he's talking about all the mistakes he's made. He's like, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've missed 37 game winners, yada, yada, yada. And he's just listing off all the times he's failed. And then at the end of the commercial, he says, and that is why I succeed. Wow. And it is like such a flipping of the perspective of that. Like, man, this man has missed more shots than some people will ever attempt to take.
Hey, wow.
And that is why he succeeds. That's why he's the GOAT.
That's insane to think that way. But it takes someone that's like powerful. That to think that way. How many times, when was the last time you truly failed?
Well, at something creative or like.
Just period, whatever it is that you're doing in life. For me, it would be pandas.
I thought you meant like, I mean, there's times I failed when like I.
Like you had to quit
I
it.
I chose to like. Talk back to you and give you an attitude or something like that was a failure where I could have just been like pick and choose my battles and like stay quiet and don't pop off out of your mouth.
Not no, like failures that you can't get back. Mm-hmm. Like, so for me, you know, dream record deal, you know, invited the wrong person in, can't get it back. Like that, to me, that was a failure.
Here's the thing though, when we're talking about that, invited the wrong person in, can't get it back. Pandas was pretty awesome because that person at the time was adding some pretty awesome elements to it. He just switched it up.
Think Pandas only worked because of him, because he was incredibly talented. He would have been along for the ride no matter what, you know, as producer, you know.
But your problem was
letting him in an ownership.
Ownership of the group.
Because he would have still had he would have the exact same things. Uh-huh. Exact same money, exact same everything. He would own half of the publishing, half of the whatever. He wouldn't have the decision on whether or not this thing's gonna fly or fall. You know, that would be on me.
I hear what you're saying.
So that would be to me my last failure that I'm like, what could this have been? But when I think about it, even now when I try to like envision the stage and me going back as a rapper, I can't envision it. I can't envision the stage. I can envision it doing this, just talking, getting up there. No, I don't need no damn, you know,
pyro.
Crazy pyro. I don't need to impress you. We just need to impress you with our heart, what we have to say, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? That makes me feel good. I guess just because I'm older and I'm like, I don't want to like do all that other stuff. But I feel like that was my last great shot at becoming something great. And when I look at my manager, Jay, who's all his artists are winning right now, you know, all of his artists, they're just winning. I'm like, I told him the other day, I was like, shit, bro, if I would have just kept it me and you, bro, we'd probably be winning right now. We just started laughing. I was like, damn, missed opportunity. But I don't know if I want to be there.
Yeah. For me, my last, what felt like a failure is actually the thing that caused me to stumble into like the thing that God continually has opened doors for. So when you first moved here, and that's like, that's another thing that I've really been thinking about recently is like so many times the things that we have planned for ourselves just fail. Like it doesn't matter if the stars are aligned. It doesn't matter if you have the right team. Like sometimes these things just fail. And then you end up being where you're supposed to be by accident. Mm-hmm. Like you just stumble into it. And I feel like at least for my life, since Maddie and I have been here in LA, some of the greatest blessings in my life, some of the greatest things that have provided for our lifestyle are literally things that I've just stumbled into. Mm. I didn't have plans. So one of the things was when we first came here, I was just looking to have a job. I was jobless. Yeah. Maddie was bringing in the cheddar. And we moved here to LA because we felt like there was a sense of purpose, but then also because like Maddie's just a boss.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. Maddie mama. And I'm so grateful because I love you, Maddie.
We love you.
And so I had joined this dude had a good sized team, and he was starting like a training business. So they collaborated with some schools for after school programs to train kids in basketball and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. Like I could use this, get connected or whatever. And so I'd been working for maybe like a month or two. I'm not getting paid nothing crazy, but the hours are so limited. So it kind of sucks because it's like all this commute time for making hardly anything. Right. Mm-hmm. Like what good is it making $40 an hour if it's like a 3-hour commitment because of the commute? Then you're like breaking it down and gas money. You're like, man, it's just whack.
Yeah, you know?
So anyways, I'm doing a good job for it. And like a couple months in, they're like, hey, we want to bring you up into kind of a higher realm in this. You want to use you to like recruit different schools and you'll get a commission and stuff like that. And so I'm thinking, oh, great. So if I sign up, like I go to a school, I talk with their athletic director, yada, yada, yada. We kind of form some plan for an after school program. I could recruit coaches and I take a percentage of that. It kind of feels multi-level marketing type thing, you know, but it's like, I guess it's better. I don't know. And so I remember
you were the Karen of the basketball multi-level marketing.
I was light-skinned Karen. I was blaring. And I just remember I went to a couple schools to try and recruit them and nobody wanted to work with me. And it was funny because it was just, I wasn't good at that politicking thing.
I'm really
good at training people in basketball. I'm like professional
level.
Turns out
sales, not your gift.
Yeah, apparently. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, man, this sucks. Like I went from making like $600 a week back home in cash. This is like a little side hustle, just training kids. Wasn't even training that many kids. And now I'm barely making anything and I'm trying to grow this with them and it's not working. So anyways, it gets to the point where I was just like, this ain't even worth it. Mm. So fast forward now a couple times. So now it's been unbelievable. Like how many things have opened up for me on my own personal training, like literally do not have room in my schedule to take on more clients. And my groups are getting bigger.
Wow.
My rates getting higher. The clientele I'm working with, I'm now working with billionaires. I wish I was making billionaires. I'm not. I'm just working with them now. And it's interesting because I think of like at that moment and I was like, man, this felt like a 4 or 5 month kind of failure of mine. Like it was like, man, I can't get this thing off the ground. Do I not have this anymore? What am I going to do if I don't do this? Mm. You know what I'm saying? And then it ended up becoming one of those things where I stumbled in and now it's like, it's just me and I get to create my own schedule. And now that side hustle makes more than my full-time job.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's been like such a crazy thing. So it's interesting because I think like, I'm glad that didn't succeed.
Yeah.
Mm. Like at the time it sucked and the feeling and the pain of it not working out really hurt. But then now looking back, I'm like, oh, that was actually the thing I'm so glad did not happen. Mm. Yeah. What I thought was a failure at the time might have actually been the thing that needed to allow me to stumble into what I'm in now, which is way better because now no one's taking a cut of what I make.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I get that all me. You know, and I don't have to take commissions here and I don't, you know, and
you commission yourself. Thank you, man.
I am commissioned.
When your side chick becomes your main chick. For me, my last biggest, I don't know if this is my last, but I've probably failed many times since this, but this is the one that just popped into my head is, the TV project that I was doing with America Ferrera and Kevin Hart. And I was so excited about this, came up with this TV show idea, was partnered with a really great writer. We had so much in common. She's Latina, I'm Latina. She's from the Bay, I'm from the Bay. Hey, let's write a TV show. And we have amazing producing partners on our side. And I remember going around to different meetings and pitching the show to networks. And Kevin Hart showing up to our pitch meeting and he had just flown in from doing his stand-up tour. And I was like so grateful that he came to the meeting because that says a lot in this town, you know, and him putting his stamp of approval, not just his name, but actually like talking to these network executives being like, you need to give Angela a show. We have a great idea. Whatever. It was like an amazing cosign. I'm like, who's going to say no to this? You know what I mean? We got America, Kevin, me. Okay. Who's going to say no? I dare somebody say no. Everybody said no. So I was like, just kidding. I take my dare back. But it was, so NBC said yes at first. They bought our idea to write a script, and then we wrote the script, and then they're like, just kidding, we don't want it. But man, I was fully disappointed in that and sad about it. And this is like not the first time that I've been through this development process, and it doesn't end the way I like. But it was like another one bites the dust, you know. But I thought this one for sure, I had like the dream team, and it did not pan out my way. And I think I'm still waiting for that side chick becomes the main chick moment in my life. But that was probably one of the most recent big fails.
Remember when we went to Radio City to watch Chappelle when he first shows back? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. First shows back.
Yeah.
And we got to go backstage because Ange and him shared the agent, same agent. And
yeah.
There's something that he told us that I never knew.
He said, I heard you just got your development deal. And honestly, it wasn't even this development deal, the Kevin Hart and America one. It was one of the previous ones that did not work out. But anyways, he was like, I heard you just got your development deal. Congratulations. I was like, thank you. And he was like, keep in mind, I got 11 development deals before I got the Chappelle show.
Whoa.
And it was
11 different deals.
11.
It was like, that moment I remember feeling so defeated and empowered all at the same time. Like,
I mean, his meaning behind it was don't give up.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. I felt empowered and defeated at the same time, because it was like, don't give up. Look at Chappelle. He's freaking amazing and like, you know, the greatest at what he does and like all of that stuff. But at the same time, like, damn, it took him 11. I'm barely 11. On like 4 or 5. And like, how many is it going to take? And so I remember that moment being like, oh, okay. Thank you for your advice. Got it. Appreciate that.
Man, it's even like, it's funny because what you were saying, B, reminds me of a conversation we were having yesterday. We were lucky to go do this TV episode with Sebastian Maniscalco and Bert Kreischer. And before they're both like big comedians. Before we got on set, Bert was telling us how, you know, he was trying to figure out what the hell is he going to do when COVID hit. Cause he was just like, how am I going to, you know, take care of this money thing? And then he told us, you know, that podcast became something that he stumbled into that he did back in the day. He's been doing it for like 9 years. And then it organically grew into something where he's like, I'm killing it more in podcasting than I am out there.
Whoa.
And he's just like, it's real. And he's like, it wasn't even something that I was, you know, he initially was saying he was doing the road, then he was trying to get on TV shows, trying to do movie, you know, trying to do all these things. And he was like, I started saying no to that stuff because the podcast was doing so well that it's like, it doesn't make sense for me to go do that. And this is off of something that he wasn't trying to do. It was just something that he stumbled into. He happened to have the right friends. He got on Rogan a bunch of times. But it's all like stumbling. It's not like I
stumbled into stand-up.
It wasn't like he was planning it.
I didn't want to be a stand-up. And even when I did become a stand-up, I avoided it. When people would ask me if I was a stand-up, I would say no. I just do that for fun. I'm an actress. Mm-hmm. What'd you do acting-wise? Oh, nothing. What have you booked? Oh, well, I see I haven't yet. But I was still like, no, I'm not a stand-up.
Yeah.
I was avoiding it. And it wasn't until I got my first check for stand-up comedy. I did this event at a Mormon holiday party. And they found me on MySpace. That's how long ago it was. They found me on MySpace and were like, will you come perform at our holiday party? And I was like, yeah, sure, but I'm not Mormon. And they were like, oh, no, it's okay. You don't have to be Mormon. We're just looking for clean comedians to come. And we're going to do a comedy competition. And you guys perform. And then we'll pick a winner. And we're like, okay, sure.
A comedy competition?
Yeah.
I never heard the story, Queen.
So, yes, you have.
I never heard this
story. You have. And You have. And so then I get to this Mormon holiday party, and there's a, like, maybe, I don't know, they got like 10 comedians there, and we all do our set, and I ended up tying for first place with another comic, and I won $600 that night. That was the most money I had ever made in one, not even a night. Like, I was up on stage for 10 minutes and I won $600, and I was like, are you kidding me? I'm gonna be a comedian. And it was like, from that moment on, I flipped a switch in my brain that I was like, oh, I better write some more jokes so I can do more Mormon parties and get more $600 checks.
1000% have never heard that story.
Babe.
Babe, look at my face. Look at me. 1000%.
I have told this story on this podcast. Babe,
look at my face.
On this podcast. Look at my face.
1000%.
You guys, if you've heard me tell this story on this podcast,
I've never heard you tell this story. Message me. I've never heard you tell this
story. Unless I'm zoning out more than I'm aware of. I don't think I've heard this story on this pod. I
never have heard that story.
Really?
I know all your stories because I bring them up and I tell you how proud I am of them. I heard your Michael Jackson story, you dancing for money, the story of you being a clown. I've heard all the old stories.
Yeah.
I've never heard the Mormon joke story.
I got banned.
This is one of the more common arguments Maddie and I have. I'm always like, dude, I told you this story. And she's like, baby, I haven't heard this story. Yes, you have heard this story. No, I haven't. Okay, let me share the story about Molly one more time.
It's funny because I know all of Manny's stories, and when he starts telling the story, I'm like, oh, man, we get it. You carried guns. You robbed people. I know this story. And then every now and then,
call my testimony, babe.
He'll tell a new one.
Sorry.
He'll tell a new one. I'll be like, ooh, I've never heard this one before.
Yeah. I'm sorry you have to hear my testimony. I hear your testimony a lot too. Let's just keep it real. I think.
Not as much. You guys, can you please DM us? Whose testimony have you heard more, mine or Manny's? Okay.
It's not going to be that. I don't talk about my testimony out loud. It's only
personal.
How
many times have you heard Manny talk about carrying guns? Go, sound off.
On DMs. This podcast?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I heard there's a new drinking game when it comes to that. Every time Manny mentions it, someone takes. I'm kidding.
Babe, I'm gonna let's fact check that, because I guarantee you I have not talked about my gun wielding.
Oh
days
my God. As y'all, much hit as you up think. DMs. Hit up the DMs immediately.
No, I don't.
Immediately. If you've heard in a previous podcast, maybe talk
put
about
a little gun, if you've put heard a little in a gun previous emoji in the comments.
Put that squirt gun emoji in the comments if you've ever heard.
Think about what you just said. If you've ever heard him say it in a previous podcast. Yeah, of course I've talked about it. That's my testimony.
I know, but that's
why
what
are you
saying
trying to shut down my testimony?
That's what this whole thing is about. How many times have they heard your testimony over my testimony?
Yeah.
That's what that was about.
I'm going to.
Every podcast.
That is so not true.
85% of the podcast episodes.
Why are you? Is this the podcast called How Many Times I Can Lie in an Episode? Is that what we're doing?
No.
We were talking about failure. You're failing to tell the truth right now, and that's what you're doing.
You are failing to recognize your repetitive ways.
You're horrible. I think.
You're horrible.
I think, you know, the thematic continuity that we're trying to assess is that failure is necessary. Mm-hmm. It's almost like get comfortable with it. Like get real comfortable with it. And not with what you thought it was about or the connotation that it has, you know, when it's used in as a weapon, you know, but in a sense that it's very much a part of the process in which you have to be able to find a home in failure and not like look at it as a negative thing.
Yeah. What? And it's even that like throw a bunch of shit on the wall and eventually something's going to have to stick. Right. But
yeah, that was my advice a millionaire gave me.
Yeah. But I'm sure like the things that did fall, he didn't marinate on them.
No, he just kept going.
Yeah.
He kept going because there's, and this guy I follow on Instagram, Thatch, he's a big real estate guy. And he's like, you're going to make a bunch of mistakes. I bought this one, thought I could flip it, wasn't able, but I did these three right. I did this one wrong. And I did these 10 right. I did this one wrong. Mm-hmm. I just got my averages got better. Mm. So I don't lose sleep over the ones I did wrong because I'm doing so many right. But you can't do everything right. You can't always win.
Here's another thing too about winning and stuff. Just thinking about my creativity and like my joke writing. So you think I'm on stage for an hour and people are laughing the entire time, but some of those jokes are funnier than the other ones. Some of those jokes get like a level 5 laugh where it's like, oh, this is funny and entertaining. And then some of those jokes were like at 9, 10 and people can't breathe. So just because the other jokes were level 5 laughter doesn't mean they're a failure. Like the just because they weren't at the level 9, 10. The problem that I was getting into early on is I had this nail salon video pop off. And then I was thinking, great, how am I going to top that? And then the Bon Quiqui video comes out and I'm like, great, how am I going to top that? And I think I had to stop trying to top myself, because when I created the nail salon video and joke, when I created the Bon Quiqui character, I wasn't trying to top myself. Mm-hmm. I was just creating. I was just having fun. Mm-hmm. So even because we always say, oh, I'm not in competition with anybody else. I'm only in competition with myself. Yeah. Even that can be counterproductive. Mm-hmm. If you make it about topping myself and being better, like there's a element of that that is good. Mm-hmm. But then there's also that that can like hold you back or like suck the fun out of what you're doing, because all of my biggest wins came out of just creating for fun, not creating to win and to top myself. Mm.
I know so many people that never do what they want to do, what they're dreaming about doing, what they have in the back of their mind, fully because they're just afraid to fail, and they actually never do it. It's just a great idea that stays in their mind that they tell themselves every once in a while, man, I would really like to do this, and they just never do for the fear of failing.
I had a friend one time who had this really great idea for a social media video, and I was like, oh my god, I want to do that. And she's not a social media like big person, but she was like, no, I'm gonna do it. I was like, okay, cool. And she wouldn't do it. And I'd be like, hey, are you gonna do that video? And she's like, yeah, I will. And I was like, because if you're not gonna do it, I will do that. I will make that video. And she was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna do it. And it was very quarantine specific. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, like, quarantine's almost over, and she never did the video. And I was like, man, I wish you would have just been like, okay, you do the video. Like, that would have been funny, and we could have put it out there, and I could have even said like, my homegirl gave me this idea for this video, whatever. But it was one of those things like, no, I'm gonna do it. But then she kept like psyching herself out to do it, and then she never did it. I was like, man, that was a really great idea. Yeah, like that could have been awesome. But oh well.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think like the failure is the way forward, you know. And sometimes like getting the ball rolling is like some of the biggest. That's like the toughest thing of like getting that ball rolling. So then you mess up, but you still got momentum. It's still moving, right? You're not starting from zero. You're starting from a little bit of speed. Now you might have slowed down because it failed, but it's going to continue to roll. It's going to continue to get bigger into something that now is like all of a sudden, oh, this is really good, you know. But I even think about like failure, like the biggest saints that we look to in the Bible.
Yeah.
Like the way they got to where they got to was failing and like trying to stumble towards God. Mm. Like, and that's part of it. Like, that's like God doesn't, I think in a lot of ways, like this whole perfection thing, God doesn't expect perfection from us. Mm-hmm. He's like, instead of like when David, when he messes up and he goes, you know, the Psalms 51, the, you know, create me a clean heart, O God. It's like, most other people, when they mess up or they sin, especially when they sin, what happens is they shy away from God. Mm-hmm. Like they try and hide it from God. It's like Adam and Eve in the garden, all of a sudden ashamed in their nakedness. And David, the beauty of David was that like in his brokenness and in his like messing up, his thing was, if I'm going to run anywhere and if I'm going to stumble anywhere, it's going to be towards him. Mm-hmm. And like, God put such an emphasis on his stumbling towards him that he ends up calling him a man after his own heart.
Yeah.
And I think like, man, that's like it in the picture of like, even in, cause I've held a lot of like a part of that in my walk of like, man, I've messed up here. I've made mistakes here. And now I'm getting better at when I mess up. It's like, I'm just going to stumble towards him.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's being righteous. Mm.
You know what? You bring this up and I think about this sometimes and I'm like, why is it that we follow a book that's literally made up of a bunch of people who did a lot of bad shit?
Yeah.
That God still considers his own. But in real life, mm-hmm. we have zero grace for people who make any mistakes.
Right.
And our, I think right. about the Carl Lentz's or the Ravi's or the whatever, and we shame them. And I'm not saying not to shame them, because the people in the, no, I am saying not to shame them. I the people in the Bible.
Hold accountable.
Yeah. The people in the Bible were held accountable typically by God, the prophets, and by the law. But God still, to a David, to mm-hmm. a Moses, a murderer, both murderers.
Yeah.
Right.
Both liars, both bad people. Mm-hmm. Like, to what we would consider, like, those people would be canceled in our certain society. I don't understand how we can preach from the book, how we can tell people about the book, how right. we can, and then have so little grace for one another yeah. and our failures. I just don't get it. I don't know. That may be off topic, but
nah.
it literally, I cannot put that together. Like, you are living your life according to a guy who was an adulterer and a murderer, and you praise David, you know, or you'll praise, you know, Paul for writing everything that he wrote, but he self-admittedly, you know, was a killer of Christians, was a complete and utter anti-God type of person, and yet you have no grace for me because I'm singing the wrong songs.
But they got grace for Donald Trump, though.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't, I don't understand. I don't yeah. get it. I can't put those two together.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, because at the end of the day, in the words of Drake, it's been a while since I've mentioned Drake.
Oh, man, we need a button for Drake.
Dude, who are we even more?
We need a Aubrey Graham button.
We need a button for Drake.
On my second favorite album he ever came out with. Nothing Was the Same. He has a song called Connect. And the hook on that is eyes closed, swanging.
Yeah.
Eyes closed, just swanging. And I think, like, if you think of that picture, it's like you're like, your eyes are closed and you're just like swinging these punches and stuff. Like, you have no idea if you're connecting at all. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, like, that is most of us.
Yeah.
Like, we are just yeah. literally living our lives. We're just like doing our best. We're just like stumbling through this thing. We're just failing through this thing to try and find God and to try and find us. And we're literally here just eyes closed, just swinging.
Mm-hmm. Our friend just went through a program recently, and one of the principles that they taught them was to fail fast.
Ooh, I like that.
Fail fast. Get up. Try. Like, do it. Like, don't sit in it and be like, oh, what if I, what if the, da, 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 whatever. Fail fast so that you can get up faster. Fail fast.
Mm. That's a good word. I think T.D. Jakes said something about that too.
When
he was overlooking his life.
For sure. He's said something about anything profound we've ever talked about. He probably has a whole sermon on it.
I think he said something about that. Like, when they said, looking over your life. Oh, he said he would have not been so afraid of offending people or like making mistakes with people, like failing other people.
Hmm.
He would have, like, they asked him, what's the one thing you would have changed?
Hmm.
And that was the one thing he said. Basically not living for other people or feeling like you're going to fail them.
What was his other thing that he said about, like, I'm one decision away
from... Oh, my God.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's it. That was it. He's like, I am one decision away from adultery. Mm. Just one. He's like, not three, not four. One. I make one bad decision, and I'm an adulterer. I'm a murderer. I'm a whatever. And he's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whew. Just one decision. I think about that all the time. I'm like, look at your phone when you're driving when you shouldn't. Crash into someone. Murder.
Ugh. Well, that wouldn't be murder, but that would be manslaughter.
Yeah, but they're dead. To the criminal system, it would be manslaughter. The guy's dead.
I know. I watch a lot of crime shows. I was just correcting you.
Yeah, okay.
Criminology.
Proper vernacular.
Yeah.
But you think about that. It's very, I don't know.
Oof.
It's intense to think about, but it's that thing where you never place yourself so high in the ladder of untouchable, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's pose the same question to the table, like, that they asked T.D. Jakes, like, if you could do one thing differently, What would that be?
Well, I never really gave a shit what people thought from the beginning. I think if I had to change something, I think I would have not hated on myself as much as I did. I feel like I stunted my growth a lot by how tyrannical I made God out to be. Mm. I'm mad that I didn't get to enjoy his freedom a lot sooner.
Ooh.
You know, I just thought he was ready to get me at any moment, at any mistake, at any, he was just ready. He was ready to take everything away. Didn't matter that my heart was for him. Didn't matter that I was trying my best. The only thing that mattered that I just kept failing at the same shit. It was like, man, I can't get this right. He has to run out of grace. There's going to be at some point, this dude's going to be real mad at me.
Yeah.
I wish I would have just not thought that way, because I feel like the first 10 years of my Christianity was just this earning his love.
How about you, B?
I'd say for me, like if I could go back and do it again, I would have spent less time being perfect and being the ideal Christian. Like, I feel like there was such, and some of this was self-inflicted. Like, I put this pressure on myself. Some of this was just the culture I was in and how others had viewed me in that space, where I felt like I had to be the standard bearer. Like, I had to be the poster boy for this, you know, of like, oh, this is what it looks like to be a sold out Christian. This is what it looks like for someone who is like really in love with Jesus. And like, because of that, I never actually gave myself permission or space to like think on my own, to feel on my own, and to like actually live my own life. Because I felt like there was all these things that I felt like I was living towards, or I had to live up to, or I had to become. And there was just like, it was like this, like, you know, it's like, you know, when you have little kids on their little cars, and they, it's the ones with the handles. So they don't actually have the actual motor in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously if you're a grown up, you have the ability to dictate where and how fast that little thing goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I felt like for so long, that was a lot of my own Christianity.
Wow.
Like, it felt like I was this little kid on this thing, but there was like all these expectations and these pressures and like these ideals that were actually the thing that was steering where my little baby car was going.
Wow.
And it isn't until you hop off on your own two feet that you actually could decide where you're going to go. And I felt like it took me a while, and I'm glad now I have a little bit more maturity to be able to like drive my own car. But like, that was the biggest thing. And I think one of my fears in hopping off of that was like losing my Christianity, like making mistakes so bad that I could like pluck myself out of the hand of God. And all of a sudden I'm just on my own, only to find out that he's way too big and he's way too good for that. You know,
as you're saying that right now about hopping off the little kid car, I was picturing you like taking off the handle that the adult hold on to, like taking it off and just like Flintstoning it
down the driveway.
Yeah.
Skrrt.
I don't need you anymore.
Little drift.
Shoot, for me, the only thing that's coming up really, because I'm trying to think of like my whole life, not just current life, that's like famous public figure life, because I feel like that's very different than childhood life. So like, if I think about public figure life, which started in my early 20s, it would be caring about what people think. I would definitely, if I could do it over, I would care less about what people thought. And then when I think back to like childhood and just like being a teenager and like thinking like, what would it be then? Like, what would I do different back then? It might still be caring what people think, but I think actually it would be more caring for other people. I've always been caring of other people, and I love people. I love my community. But I remember one time I was on the phone with my cousin, and I was taught a very valuable lesson that I didn't even realize I was this way. But I was very selfish in all matters, I wasn't aware of my selfishness, but I was on the phone with my cousin one day And this is, I'm in my early 20s. I'm not a little kid learning this lesson. Like, I'm an actual adult learning this lesson. And she's asked me about my life. What are you up to? Da da da, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then after we're done talking, I was like, okay, good talking to you. Talk to you later. And she was like, hey, how come every time we talk, I always ask about you and your life, but you never ask about me and my life? And I was like, in that moment, I did not realize like how selfish I was. Mm. And it's not just a formality, like she asked about me, then I asked about her. It was actually caring to know what was going on in her life. Like, I was very self-absorbed with like, I'm working on my dreams and my goals and like I have this and that, whatever. And just super self-absorbed. And I didn't even realize that that's the kind of person I was being. Until she, like, in love called that out in me. I was like, wow, you're right. I'm so sorry. And from that moment on, I was very intentional about my friendships and the people that I love and, like, shifting that focus into caring about the people that I love and making sure that I have brain space left for them and not being so caught up with my own dreams and my own goals that I don't have time to care about the fact that you need to find a place to live because your apartment just gave you like a notice and like you have to get out. Like, before that, I would be like, oh, I don't have time to think about your problems. I got my own problems. Mm. But now I'm very intentional about how do I be in this with you and like help you and things like that. So I feel like now it's more, I would care less about what people think. And back then, I would care more about people.
Hmm. Yeah. That's well what, said, Queen.
That's how I would very change. Well said. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Can you give me a round of applause, please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
I love you. Man, we're so glad that you guys joined us today. And we hope that you learned a little bit about failure. You learned a little bit about living more, mm-hmm. possibly loving more. Mm-hmm. Possibly not trying to get it all right all the time. Just enjoy the experience. And for goodness sake, have grace for each other. I think it's so important. We just want to give a shout out to the Patreon fam because we love you and you are the reason we get to keep doing a lot of this stuff.
Thanks, Patreoners.
For those of you who don't know, we have a Patreon that totally supports this podcast. It's from $2 to $12 to $25 for the VIP and all the way to $99 for one-on-one coaching. If you guys want to check it out, the link is in the description and we would appreciate it. We absolutely love you guys and everyone else who just tunes in and listens and shares the podcast because it's so important for you guys to keep sharing it and hopefully gaining new fans. Hopefully this stuff is something that you believe will help other people. And if you do, you have no idea how much a share, how much a like, how much a subscribe, all that stuff really helps.
Talking about it with your friends at the dinner table, in your group text.
It means a lot. And for that, check this out. I'm going to read another on our iTunes. We have a bunch of 5-star reviews, which is really awesome. And this is P. Truj. Truj? P-Truj? P-T-R-U-J.
Pete Buttigieg left us a comment.
I love Pete. P-T-U-R-U-J.
Yeah.
P-Truj.
Yeah.
Or Truj. Yeah, I don't know. It. Whatever. He or she says, cast pod for the soul. I think he meant podcast, but I love you anyways. Gave it 5 stars. And he says, picture this. You're in grade school sitting across... with applesauce on that circle carpet. You each get to go around.
Crisscross applesauce. That's the way you sit. You're sitting crisscross applesauce.
Oh, he said crisscross.
Crisscross applesauce.
Okay, so there's a couple things going on.
Should I read it? Let me do it.
No, he wrote crisscross, babe.
Okay, because he was listening to our podcast while drinking his wine with us.
Okay, and so then you're sitting crisscross applesauce on that circle carpet. You each get to go around and answer a question and give your best, honest answer. Only at this round table, you are adults, and the topics and questions are much cooler and uncomfortable. The co-host can't be any more different, which brings a smorgasbord of perspectives and insights into life's trials and tribulations. Don't let that deter you, though. They are all homies or lovers, so rest assured that they still have some common interest and ideas. They don't know this, but we are all friends and we sit at that round table together. Only I answer from my car on the freeway. They are not allowed to speak on anything that I bring to the table. But how dope is that?
That is a really good review.
That made my heart warm. I love that, man.
That is so good. I'm going to read another
Petrugge.
One. Bronzy B. Shout out to Bronzy B. February 11, 2020. That was last year. Whether you're young or older, you can learn something new every time from their others' experiences and different perspectives listening to this. Thank you for appreciating different perspectives, Bronzy B.
Thanks, shout guys. Out.
Hey, don't forget, go to iTunes, leave a review, 5-star, hopefully, and tell us your stories on whether you're enjoying this. Or you can be like Agnerve.
Don't end on a negative.
I love
this
shit. You
have to end on a positive.
I'm not hating,
but
just
end
annoyed.
On a positive.
Oh, wait, this is good. This is positive. I'm not hating, just annoyed. At first, I really did enjoy the podcast, but hearing him say the N-word was unsettling and annoying.
Yeah.
That isn't a word that anyone should be using.
I get it.
Thank you, Aggie. I hope you're not white.
That's what it says?
No.
Oh, I was about to say. I was like, have you seen us? There's no white people at the table right now,
no,
currently.
I'm always just more amazed.
Okay, end on a positive one.
Okay. Nicole Ray. Nicole Ray, May 27, 2020. As I'm currently walking through my own tribulation after asking my high school sweetheart for a divorce from a 20-year marriage,
wow.
I can't imagine getting through this time without listening to y'all.
Wow.
Meditating, yoga, and listening to you guys has made me understand that it's okay to hurt, to be angry, and to get raw and real about my emotions and find myself again as a 40-year-old woman.
Wow. Mm.
It's okay to feel this way. Mostly, definitely, Manny said it best. You're about to break your own heart because people will change when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing. Mm. That this podcast had made me grow and see things in ways that I didn't know I could. So thank you all. Mm. I love that y'all incorporate spiritual religious beliefs as I am too a daughter of Christ. However, I know that my relationship with God right now isn't at its best, and I'm okay with that. God will be there when I'm ready to walk and talk with him again. Thank you guys for once again being raw and real in a world full of illusions. God bless.
Love it.
Thank you, Nicole Ray. Love you. I love you all. I even love Aggie.
Also, Nicole, you are walking with God because God is in you.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever a time where...
So, you're good, girl.
You're good. And to all of you other ones, thank you so much. And we like to say, we pray that you find a seat at the table, at this table that they're talking about. But if you don't, you are always, always welcome at ours. Cheers.
Cheers.